This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
You're listening to Total Information AM on 104.1 FM. I'm Megan Lynch. What will President Trump's order calling for the dismantling of the U.S. Education Department mean for you and your kids? With me in studio this morning is Stephanie Mahfood, Dean at the School of Education at Webster University. Stephanie, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
So first off, let's set for our listeners, what does the U.S. Education Department actually do?
So that's a great question. And so I'll put on my teacher hat to give you a little bit of history and fun facts about the School of Education, the Department of Education. It was started in 1980 in the Carter administration. It's the smallest of the 15 congressional cabinets. It has, as of last year, it had about 4,200 employees. And about 4% of the total federal budget is housed in the Department of Education. What it oversees primarily is the distribution of funds that go to higher education institutions. For example, think about your Pell Grants, your federal student worker funds. Many of you who have high school seniors, think about the FAFSA. Those are all things that are housed in the U.S. Department of Education. It also is charged with reinforcing compliance with some of our title programs and some of those legislative initiatives that impact more vulnerable populations. IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, that is something that is looked at and enforced under the U.S. Department of Ed. Title IX, Title VI, Title I, all of those are impacted. And then it does research. It does research at a national level to then inform decisions that are made at the state level about how we best educate our children.
It sounds like through this executive order, from what I've read over the weekend, is that some of these duties would be shifted to other agencies.
Correct.
Could it be that there are other agencies that could handle some of these functions maybe better than the U.S. Department of Education does?
Well, remember, historically, again, the Department of Education was started in 1980. Prior to that, its responsibilities were housed in other agencies. So right now, my understanding is that the Small Business Administration would absorb some of the responsibilities related to federal student loans for higher education. There's discussion of the Department of Health and Human Services overseeing special education and IDEA. And so there's discussion of how that would look. But that's in line with historical precedent of how things were done prior to the U.S. Department of Education being the U.S. Department of Education.
Which was better, before or after?
So I think it depends on I think what we're talking about is having the reason the Department of Education was started was to have a department that was fully focused on the education of students, and particularly those students who might be more vulnerable to discrimination. And so this is a department that is that has its full attentions on issues like that. So I would say we want to make sure that that does not get lost in the shuffle if we are to indeed dismantle the Department of Education, which, by the way, requires an act of Congress. I think we have to ask ourselves the question, do we want to continue to have a department that's fully focused on those kinds of issues and our vulnerable populations of students?
What are your concerns, both as someone in higher education and in someone who develops programs for K through 12?
I think one of my biggest concerns, and I'm glad that we're having this conversation, is just to make sure that people understand the role of the Department of Education and how that's different from the role of the states. I think we have to be very clear on that understanding. The Department of Education does not control what is taught in schools. That is, will continue to be, and always has been, the responsibility of the states. So I think making sure that we, as communities in discussing this, are really clear on that. My concerns always, and I'll lean into my training as a special educator, is for those students with disabilities, and to ensure that the rights and policies that guide the education of that population are protected, in addition to the other vulnerable populations in our schools.
It's interesting you say that, because as in the coverage that I've read, it seems like those are the groups that are raising the biggest red flags about this, about what it could mean for children with disabilities, and especially what it could mean from disenfranchised communities.
You Absolutely.
What are your fears about that?
Well, I do not want the education of students with our most complex learning needs to vary by what state they live in. And so I think that having federal regulations that sort of set the game board and the rules of engagement by which states move is really important. I think another thing to keep in mind, and again, I am trained as a teacher and I teach teachers now. And what we know, what research says about teaching practices that support those most complex learning needs of our students, they impact positively everyone. What we do for those populations raises all boats. And so addressing their needs benefits all students in all classrooms, no matter where they are.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
At the end of the day, for families that are listening to this, would they see much change in the delivery of education in their communities if the Department of Education were completely dismantled?
I think the short answer is not immediately. I think, first of all, again, this takes an act of Congress. I think you're going to see a lot of this, like many things that are happening with this administration. You're going to see a lot of things be playing out in the court, and that's going to take its time to trickle down and then make any kind of impact known. I would say, though, for families, it's important to, again, be educated on what the Department of Education does, what is the purview of your state schools and districts, and then to be informed about those changes so that you can appropriately be in contact with school officials and advocate for students and teachers.
One last quick question for you. You know, when we talk about Pell Grants and other financial help for college students, could this actually improve the process? The FAFSA process was plagued with problems this last year. You know, could it be better handled in an institution that deals more with financial issues?
So I think perhaps, yes, I would say that our last year of FAFSA was quite a nightmare from where I sat as well. I think that if we do that, we need to have all care and diligence exercised to ensure that those transitions are made appropriately. And that is what makes me nervous as well. There are a lot of changes happening at the federal level. This is getting caught in the shuffle. And what it looks like from where I sit is that the kind of diligent care to rehouse and think through these very complex processes, I'm not sure how much that is happening right now.
Thank you so much for your insight on this morning.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.